From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. In the Brunswick County school system, there are 19 schools. Two academic years ago, in 2014-15, 158 kids dropped out of school. The following year, 21 fewer kids, 137 dropped out. That lowers the dropout rate less than half a percentage point, but on a practical level, it means there are 21 more students that have a shot at getting their high school diploma. The positive trend is attributable to a pretty broad range of factors, say officials, and today we're going to explore some of those factors and what those charged with keeping local children on the right path are learning about how to do that. With us today, Deanne Meadows is the Assistant Superintendent and the Chief Academic Officer for Brunswick County Public Schools. Deanne Meadows, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you.
Bonnie Jordan is the Executive Director of Communities in Schools for Brunswick County, which launched in 1995. Bonnie Jordan, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
We're inviting you to join the conversation. If you have a question about public schools in Brunswick County, give us a call on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Deanne Meadows, when we're looking at the dropout rate, what does that really tell us about how kids in the Brunswick County school system are doing? How is that number different from, say, the graduation rate?
Well, the dropout rate represents students who return back to school within the 20th day of every school year. So it's not tracking students long term, it's tracking them from year to year. So there were 137 students that did not return back within that 20th day in the county this school year. The graduation rate actually tracks students from 9th grade through 12th grade and is following those students. They may go somewhere else and come back, but they're actually tracked the entire time for those 4 years that they to get to graduation.
So when the dropout rate then goes up or down, what does that tell you as a school official about what's happening with these kids?
Well, it really is because of it being a number that's, you know, out of the 14,000 students, 137, it really is about working individually with students. And how do we actually help an individual student find a way to be motivated to be in school and to continue to be educated and reach graduation? So it's really looking for those tools and those resources to help students make a connection with our schools, build relationships with staff members, and become a part of the school environment and want to return the next year.
Bonnie Jordan, Executive Director of Communities in Schools in Brunswick County, what are some of the obstacles that Brunswick County kids face when it comes to staying in schools? What are some of the issues?
One of the most widespread issues is the general effect of poverty. You have many children who don't have the basic needs that are required just to get them to school. They may not have food in the morning. They may not have proper clothing, school supplies. They may not have support in the household. So they're facing challenges before they even get to the door of the school. They may have issues with academic proficiency where they struggle to keep pace with their peers academically. They may be socially isolated. We are in a very rural community. There are not a lot of cultural opportunities there. And when you live in poverty, those opportunities are even more limited. So there are a variety of struggles that the students face.
How do cultural opportunities impact a kid's academic performance?
Those children that have more opportunity outside of school for enrichment are exposed on a greater level to the topics that they're learning about in school. They may go home and have access to reading materials to do independent reading. They may have parents who are well-educated and can expose them to real-life examples of what they're learning in the classroom. An impoverished child may go home and sit in front of a television for 6 or 7 hours a day. They may not live close to peers who they can interact with in positive social ways. So it really puts them behind their peer group.
Deanne Meadows, Assistant Superintendent in Brunswick County Schools.
You said there are 14,000 some kids in the entire school system. Mm-hmm. Of those, do you know how many require additional services?
Well, I mean, we provide additional services in many ways. So to have an exact number, I don't have. But we provide additional services through our Exceptional Children's Program. We provide it through our Child Nutrition Program by receiving free and reduced meals, or we serve breakfast to every child in our district for free. We have students that are receiving services through communities and schools and their graduation coaches in our middle schools. We also have services through our counselors and our behavior specialist. So there's lots of different types of services that are within our schools, as well as community type services that happen through mental health counseling, other agencies that work with our students in our schools. So there's, it would be hard for me to give that a number or a percentage because a good number of children all need, I mean, almost all of them need some sort of service probably to assist them in some way, whether it's a health condition, a mental health condition, or poverty, just a lack of experiences and exposure, a motivation to be able to want to come to school and have that desire to get an education. It's a variety of experiences for students, and so each one of them have different needs that we have to look at and try to decide how to best reach success with that student.
So I can see how, from a school's point of view, that would be very hard to track how many kids get extra services. But if you had to guess, and I know officials hate speculation, which is good, but do you think that most kids in the Brunswick County school system probably take advantage of one additional service or another? Do you think there are many kids who just go to school and go home and don't really have any what we might call special needs?
Well, I think in terms of need of resources and services, I think that the large majority of them need some sort of help in some way. I don't want to use the word special needs because a lot of people connect that to exceptional children or special ed services, which are very different. And that's about 13% of our population. But in terms of needing some resources or services outside of the Exceptional Children's Program, the large majority of our kids probably need some sort of resource and some sort of assistance to be able to be successful in school.
And is that one of the reasons that we're looking at a higher dropout rate in Brunswick County than, say, neighboring New Hanover County? I mean, when you look at New Hanover County schools, their dropout rate is about half of the Brunswick County school dropout rate. Mm-hmm. There may be more resources there, more affluent parents in New Hanover. I don't know what all the factors are, but Deanne Meadows, what would you attribute that to?
And I haven't made a comparison between the two districts. I do know that one of the reasons, just from the data that came from the state, that New Hanover County had a lowered rate was that they had 34 students who were able to count going to the adult high school diploma program with the community college as a part of their reduction in their dropout rate. So we did not have that number because our only connection is with the Brunswick Community College, which we have students that go, but in this is the first year that's been allowed, and we did not have any finish yet. We're hoping that that number will assist us in the future as giving kids another opportunity or another option to be able to get a high school diploma, even if it's not in one of our traditional schools.
Bonnie Jordan with Communities in Schools. Many of us have heard about Communities in Schools and may sort of vaguely know it as a nonprofit that provides support services. But what does CIS do in Brunswick County?
We go in and we partner with the schools. We have a success coach, which is the person that Dr. Meadows referred to, who helps work towards eventual graduation for students. We go in and we work with the team at the school to identify those students that have a need for additional supports. As Dr. Meadows said, a lot of them have some level of need for additional support, but we try and target those students who really are not able to be successful without regular intervention and support services. So we work with that team and we identify individual students, and then we case manage them and develop individual case plans to provide service and support to them throughout the school year.
And how many kids do you serve in Brunswick County?
Right now we're in 5 middle schools, and last year we served 284 students. This year we project to serve a little over 300 with those individual case-managed student services. In addition to that, though, we do what we call Tier 1 services because we're a multi-tiered intervention system. And those services are really more broad-based and designed to reach a minimum of 75% of that school's population. So we do things like Kindness Week, some small group interventions for building positive peer groups. We've helped with the Rachel's Challenge initiative that the school district has committed to, with helping to run some of the Friends of Rachel clubs. So we try to get involved in a broader way in that school community so that we really establish a presence and are seen as a positive role model and someone that the children can go to when they have needs.
What is Kindness Week?
That is really a school initiative, really just to get all the kids connecting and thinking about peer relationships in a positive way. And it just really promotes that cross-communication among peer groups.
How do you do that? How do you engage in Kindness Week, Deanne Meadows?
Well, one of the things is we had an assembly at each one of our schools about with Rachel's Challenge. And it's really talking about bullying and trying to prevent that, trying to get kids to, you know, truly be kind to each other and make connections with each other. And, you know, just finding ways to model that the way that you should interact with others that you, you know, cross paths with in the day.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking about the challenges and the opportunities facing children in the Brunswick County school system. We have Bonnie Jordan of Communities in Schools and Deanne Meadows, Assistant Superintendent of Brunswick County Schools, with us today. And they're taking your questions on this Wednesday. You can give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. Listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're learning today about the challenges facing children in the Brunswick County school system and how school administrators and community organizations are working to deal with those challenges. With us today, Deanne Meadows, Assistant Superintendent and Chief Academic Officer in Brunswick County Schools. We also have Bonnie Jordan, Executive Director of Communities in Schools in Brunswick County. If you have a question for our guests, you can reach us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Just before we went to break, Deanne Meadows, you were explaining Kindness Week and how you had school assemblies to sort of explain the idea behind it and why interactions between students are so important. Can you talk about how Kindness Week plays out throughout that week? Take us through a Kindness Week. What do you see? What's different in the hallways, in the classrooms?
Well, the teachers are promoting students' interactions with each other, and we make it a part of our PBIS program, which is Positive Behaviors and Interventions and Supports, which we expect to be in all 19 of our schools. That's one of the initiatives that we have to try to help with discipline issues and behavior issues that happen in the schools. And so it's really promoting the kindness between students and making sure that we teach kids how to behave and act in a positive way by using kindness towards each other, and then promoting that by recognizing it when students actually do it. So if students are actually kind to each other and they open the door for each other, or they give a pencil to each other, or, you know, they give tips to each other on how to solve something in their class, teachers promoting that that is the right way to behave, and that's what we expect of all of our students, and thank you for behaving in that manner. Helping kids learn that that's the right way to interact with each other.
Bonnie Jordan with Communities in Schools. You have a program for parents, don't you? Do I have this right, that teaches parents how to be less harsh and focus more on kind of positive reinforcement for their own children?
Yes, we have a parenting program that functions actually in the community, and we implement the Incredible Years program. It's a 14-week evidence-based program, and it focuses on reducing harsh discipline and reinforcing positive parenting skills. And it's for parents of children ages 5 to 12, and that's offered in the evening in several series throughout the year and at scattered sites throughout the county. We also offer support groups to parents. We have a support group for single parents, and we have a grandparents raising grandchildren support group. And they really provide a vital support system to those families that are really struggling in their roles, to raise children in what sometimes can be a difficult environment. A lot of them have multiple factors in their households that have led to them either being single parents or being a grandparent who's now in the role of raising another generation of children. So we just really try to provide that support, and we believe that that also links to dropout prevention because it prepares those parents to provide the support those students need.
How do you get parents involved in that program? I mean, what would make a parent say, I think I'm too harsh with my kid. I need to join a program and learn more about that.
It's not really about them necessarily being harsh with their children. It's just about the challenges today of raising children, you know, with all the challenges of social media, bullying, like Dr. Meadows had mentioned, just really trying to get children, you know, to be raised in a positive environment, and then they take that forward into the community and into their school community as well. So it is completely voluntary. It's not a mandated program as part of anything else. So we just make those resources available. We approach it in a very positive manner, and it really provides a good support. We've had a two-parent household come, and they might bring the grandmother who watches the children after school, and all three of them would take the course because there's those generational differences in discipline. Or you may have parents who were raised differently, and they, you know, maybe don't see completely eye to eye on how to raise their children or how to discipline them. So we just try and get everybody on the same page and focusing in a positive manner.
What's an example of something from that course that might make parents listening now say, I never thought about it that way?
Mm-hmm. We just walk through ways to provide positive reinforcement rather than always pointing out the negative. When a child does something wrong, it's really a learning experience, and providing them with positive feedback, modeling ways yourself where they can reduce conflict and they can handle situations differently. And then sometimes rewarding them when they do exhibit positive behavior, particularly between siblings or between their peers or even their parents and the child.
Can you take us through a scenario with a parent and a child, for instance, that might be sort of laid out in that class? The kid comes home after curfew. And how does the parent deal with that?
Sure. Well, we would walk the parent through that situation, and others in the group would share their experiences as well. So, we would go step by step and look at different ways that they could handle that situation. You know, looking at, you know, what is the real reason behind the child pushing back with the parent? You know, is it that they're at a certain maturation level and they're looking for more independence? And is that something they can negotiate with the parent rather than having that be a negative between the parent and the child? Can they gradually give them, you know, more responsibility, be a little more flexible, and then in return have the child abide by those boundaries, that the new boundaries that are set?
So you're saying there's a way to listen to the child even when the child is acting out, and take that to a constructive place rather than an acrimonious kind of.
Right, and for the child to listen to the parent and feel like they're really being heard.
So tough with teenagers. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking today about Brunswick County Schools, why the dropout rate is going down, what's on the docket now that voters have approved a $152 million school bond, and what persistent challenges face children in Brunswick County. Our guests today, Bonnie Jordan, Executive Director of Communities in Schools in Brunswick County, and Deanne Meadows, Assistant Superintendent and Chief Academic Officer for Brunswick County Public Schools. And they're answering your questions on this Wednesday. You can email us at coastline@whqr.org or give us a call at 910-343-1138. The phone lines are open. And Helen from Shallotte, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because I am the executive director with Smart Start of Brunswick County. And when we talk about success in school, Smart Start, I think, is probably tied into that piece. Our programs focus on preparing children for success in school and life from birth to five. So when we look at preparing children to go into kindergarten, much of that happens during those very early years. So I tend to think that most people have heard of the North Carolina Pre-Kindergarten Program, which is one of the programs we administer, and children that are 4 years old are placed into high-quality child care programs to help prepare them for transitioning into kindergarten. We do have a parents as teachers program, which is a home visitation program. We have Raising a Reader, which is early literacy. So when I was listening to Ms. Jordan and Ms. Meadows talking about the different programs or activities, those are actually happening at a very young level as well.
And briefly, birth, Helen, explain why it's so important for kids to have some of these issues addressed when they're young, before they get into kindergarten.
Well, it's the first 5 years is when basically 90% of the brain is developing. So it's language, it's hearing and vision, it's cognitive functioning, it's social and emotional. So all those wiring start at that very early age. And if you miss that opportunity, you don't necessarily get that same level of opportunity back.
And how do parents take advantage of Smart Start? How do they get in touch with you, Helen?
Well, we are located, our office is located in Shallotte, but we do have a website, Smart Start of Brunswick County, and it shares all the information about our different programs. Again, Raising a Reader, NC Pre-K, and Parents as Teachers are just several of the programs that we administer. That we are online that would share quite a bit of information. But I just feel like this birth to five piece gets sometimes missed in the equation.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's so crucial to, brains are built, not born. So that's what we try to do.
Well, Helen, we'll add that to our website when we put this up at whqr.org. And thank you so much for your call today.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about Brunswick County schools and the challenges that some children face in these schools, why the dropout rate is going down, and what is on the docket for the future. We have Deanne Meadows, Assistant Superintendent and Chief Academic Officer for Brunswick County Schools with us today, and Bonnie Jordan, who is the Executive Director of Communities in Schools in Brunswick County. And they're answering your questions on this Wednesday. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. How much of a problem, Deanne Meadows, is homelessness for kids in Brunswick County?
Well, since the recession in 2008, we have had an increase in the number of students who are identified in the Homeless McKinney-Vento Act, which is a federal law. And so we have, in terms of the exact number, I can't give you that, but it has, it's quadrupled since it was in 2008.
How do you figure out that a child is homeless?
Well, it usually is from, just discussions with the student through a counselor or an administrator or a teacher. Parents come in and have conversation with us about something, a hardship that they're going through, that they've had to move to a place, as Ms. Jordan was saying earlier, living in a hotel, or as she was talking to us before the show, she was telling us about students living in a hotel, and that's happening in our schools. And so we find that out, and then we try to figure out how to make sure they continue to access education in our schools. And so it's really through parents and students and hearing about their individual situations that we then try to figure out a solution.
I'm sure there are parents listening now who have never experienced homelessness or, that level of poverty firsthand, and probably have a hard time understanding why a child would be with a parent still, for instance. Mm-hmm. And, I can hear the, well, why wouldn't you just take the child away from that parent and put them in a good foster home, or, get them into services somehow?
Well, I think if anyone was to watch the television and see the number of advertisements asking for foster homes, there's actually a shortage of foster homes out there, so that's not an easy answer to, you know, remove students from their homes and place them in foster care. They also, you know, there is a desire to keep children with their parents, the need to be with, you know, their mothers and their fathers or grandparents, a family member. You know, research says that that actually is a better placement for the majority of students. So we want to try to make sure that they still have that adult that is the connection to them, the safety net, in a way for that child, even though they may be living in a hotel or having to move from home to home, different places on a regular basis. That is one safe connection for them, is still with their parent. So, you know, we're going to try to do what we can to provide for that family as much as possible, while ensuring that that student still gets as much education as possible. Because even though they're coming to school, that stress of being homeless and having those, you know, that fear of what they go home to on a daily basis is going to be a barrier to learning, you know, their how to read, how to do math, all of that on a regular basis. So we want to try to remove that barrier or limit it as much as possible for that child to be able to learn during the day.
Bonnie Jordan, can you kind of paint a picture for us of, let's take an example of someone, fictional person who is homeless and is taking care of a child. How does someone arrive at that point where they're living in hotel rooms or moving themselves and their child around from home to home?
It can be a it can be for a variety of reasons. A lot of times it's purely socioeconomic. Someone may have lost a job. They can no longer afford their rent or their mortgage, so they lose their housing. Someone may be in a domestic violence situation where they've left the household. There are just really a number of reasons, but what happens is once you get into that homelessness cycle, it's hard to get out of it. So if you've had a change in income and now you go to a motel, you may be spending 90% of what little income you are able to derive from your current employment on that hotel room. So now how do you save for a security deposit to get a new place? And now you have poor credit because you didn't pay rent on time at your last housing location. So it just kind of snowballs. You may go and stay with a friend for a while and then, you know, they're overcrowded and you can't stay there any longer. And it's, over time, you run out of options. So it's really hard to get out of that cycle once you get into it.
Does communities and schools provide any services for people like, what do you do when you know of a child who is in a circumstance like that? What's available for that child?
Sure. We are not the primary designated person to handle homeless students in Brunswick County Schools. That's really the school district. However, we're there to provide support to any student that's identified that has a need that communities and schools can help meet. So we can provide academic tutoring. We may be able to put them into one of our 21st century after school programs where they have enrichment opportunities, academic remediation services, exposure to STEM activities, and some family engagement activities to provide that enrichment that's missing and that safe place to be after school. We may provide them with a mentor who comes in every week, which is a community volunteer who comes in and sits and has lunch with them and provides that positive adult role model and that consistency for a child who's in an inconsistent environment at home.
What are some of the volunteer opportunities for people, either through communities and schools or mm-hmm. Brunswick County school systems? What can people do who are hearing this and saying, well, I'm retired and I've got time and I can help?
Sure. Deanne can add to this, but there are a lot of opportunities for communities and schools. They can come in and be reading pals in our after-school program to help increase reading proficiency, either working in small groups or one-on-one with a student. They can come in and be a mentor, or as we call them, lunch buddies, and meet weekly with a child and have lunch with them and just really be a listening ear and a positive role model. They can help with homework. They can help with tutoring. They can help with special school-wide events that we're doing. They can come in for career day and be a speaker. So there's really a variety of things that they can do to support students in Brunswick County.
Deanne Meadows.
She really, she alluded to most of the things that they can do. But I think also, you know, there's tutoring times during the day that they also could participate with. It also is helping just at the school to be a resource so that the adults that are in the school have more time to spend with students. So they may not work with children, but they may work in some other capacity in the school to allow for the other adults in the building to spend more time with children. You know, there's opportunities through the different community organizations. We have great partnerships with, you know, Kiwanis and the Lions Club and the Rotaries and all of these different organizations in our community. They do so much for us. We have a couple of, the majority of the churches in our district that sponsor or work with our schools, so they can be volunteers through their churches to help. In our schools, we have backpack programs where, you know, children are provided backpacks on Fridays to take home for the weekend, and those come through different organizations. So if they are involved in their community groups, community organizations, they actually, the majority of those community organizations do come and volunteer or provide, you know, resources for our kids in the schools.
So you provide backpacks full of food for kids on Friday because why, Deanne Meadows?
Well, it's for students who, it could be those homeless students that we talked about. It could be children that are in poverty, that they may not have access to those meals on the weekends. And so, you know, we don't want them to come Monday morning just, you know, really hungry because they haven't been able to eat over the weekend. So we provide them, these organizations provide backpacks full of food for them to take home and have as food for the weekends.
It is sort of a stunning juxtaposition. In Brunswick County, there is a population of second homeowners and, you know, beautiful beach communities that are very wealthy. And then to think that there are so many kids who don't know where they're going to get a meal over the weekend.
Yeah. But I think that community is who helped us in this last bond referendum by making sure that it passed, because they see the how important having our schools and the education is for our children.
And we're going to talk about what that bond money is about to do, where that is, when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline, talking about Brunswick County Public Schools, the need out there, especially for kids in poverty. When we come back from this 90-second break, you'll have one more segment to call in with your question or comment on this Wednesday, 910-343-1138 or coastline@whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, we're learning about why the dropout rate in Brunswick County schools is going down, why there's a persistent need for additional services for kids. With us on this Wednesday, Bonnie Jordan, Executive Director of Communities and Schools in Brunswick County, and Deanne Meadows, Chief Academic Officer and Assistant Superintendent of Brunswick County Public Schools. If you have a question, you can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also reach us at coastline@whqr.org. We were talking about volunteer opportunities for people, both through churches, other community organizations, and through the school itself. If someone wants to volunteer, Deanne Meadows, what can they do with Brunswick County Schools?
Well, they need to contact a school, or they could contact our central office, and we will connect them with communities and schools. There is a training program that Communities and Schools offers for our volunteers. Of course, every volunteer has to go through a background check. You know, we want to make sure that anyone who is coming into our schools is, you know, has not had any serious incidences. So
That's
we do
important.
A background check, yes. And then we work with communities and schools and the school to try to find a placement for that person within the volunteer programs.
And speaking of that, there was a news story recently about a convicted sex offender who wound up on the campus of mm-hmm. a Brunswick County school. Mm-hmm. He was arrested. Mm-hmm. That must be frightening for parents. And it was a school that has a vulnerable population.
Well, and we have at our front desk, when people arrive on campus, they have to check in at the office, and we have what's called IdentiKid, which is a program where they their social security number, birth date, driver's license, any kind of identification is used, and it pulls up and it will identify as somebody as a registered sex offender. So when we did have an incident like that on one of our campuses, and it did trigger, and so we were able to notify law enforcement, and you know, obviously that person has been knew that they're not supposed to be on a campus. Any registered sex offender is told that. And so that's why they were arrested for being on a campus, which is a violation of the law.
And was he kind of lurking around the outside, or how did you even identify this guy?
Well, any time that this has ever happened, which is, I think it may have been twice over many years, it's a parent or a family member that has come to pick up a child or bring a child to school. And so when they do that, there is a check-in, check-out process for that student. And so they do have to go through that program, and that's how it is triggered to know that they are a registered sex offender.
We've heard about one CIS program ending in Brunswick County, Bonnie mm-hmm. Jordan. Which program is this, and what is it going to mean for kids?
Sure. That was our fee-based child care program. It provided before and after school care. It had been in operation for most of the time that CIS has been in operation in Brunswick County, and it really provided safe quality child care for before and after school. However, the need and the demand over the years has really diminished, so we were down to two programs, and those two programs are still in operation currently, but they are struggling. So it's just not something that's viable for us financially, as well as it's really not in keeping with our core mission, which is dropout prevention and focusing on areas where we can have a real impact on students who are at risk for dropping out of school. So we've made a conscious decision to refocus our efforts on dropout prevention and allow those other providers in the community who do a great job of providing fee-based childcare to provide those services, and we can move away from that at this point
so
our history.
Refocus the resources on dropout prevention.
Yes.
How is communities and schools funded in Brunswick County?
We're funded in several different ways. We write a lot of grants, so we receive some government grants, local grants, foundation grants, some support through the school district and the county, the United Way, certainly. We also do our own fundraising. We have a large benefit gala every fall. And we also have four thrift shops that we operate, and they generate unrestricted revenue for us. So that's really been very vital to our ability to sustain our programs.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking today about kids in the Brunswick County school system, why the dropout rate is going down, what the continuing needs are for this population. Our guests today, Bonnie Jordan, Executive Director of Communities and Schools in Brunswick County, and Deanne Meadows, Assistant Superintendent and Chief Academic Officer for Brunswick County Public Schools. And they're answering your questions on this Wednesday. You can give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Carl from Surf City, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air. Is Carl still there? I guess he's not. He says that he's provided the signs in the Brunswick County schools saying loving kindness, and he wants to know how they've been received so far by students and teachers. Deanne Meadows, are you aware of these signs?
I'm aware of the signs, but I have not asked that question, so I'm not able to really respond to that. I'm sure that they probably have been, the response has been very positive, but I wish I could speak to that, but I'm not able to right at this moment.
Sure. I want to ask this. A couple of weeks ago, we had a show about special education, and we were talking to people from New Hanover County Public Schools. And a grandmother called in and said that she had a child. She was taking care of her grandchild. This child had special needs. It may have been something like PTSD. And she was frustrated with the way her grandchild was treated and the individualized educational program that was laid out, got a grant to go to a private school, went there, found out there was no way to hold administrators' feet to the fire in a private school setting and was kind of throwing up her hands. Deanne Meadows, what would you say to someone like that?
Well, I mean, we try with all of our resources to find the best possible opportunity for every student that comes through. There are some students that have more significant challenges than some of the resources that we have on a regular basis. And so we do try to work to find other resources out there that we may not normally have. For example, this last year we started a day treatment program. We saw a need in our district that we had an increased number of students with severe mental health needs and severe behavior issues, and knew that we needed to do something else for those students. So this is our first year of having a day treatment program where we've partnered with Alexander Youth Network and are providing that service for students and families. As a part of that, families and the student get counseling. The mental health provider is at school all day with the students, and so far it has been very successful for those students. The students that are in the program were not going to school for full days, and all of them are going to school for full days now. We have very little behavior issues with those students, so we see that that is moving in a good direction. So we continue to look for opportunities in those difficult situations. But, you know, it's an individual education plan, and that's why it's called that, is because we have to try to figure out what will best serve that student.
Can you compare the responsibility of public school administrators, staffers today to, say, 20 or 30 years ago? I mean, it almost seems like the more we understand about the challenges and the obstacles facing the kids, the more incumbent it is on these systems to help to solve those problems. I mean, is it different?
It's very different. I've been in education over 25 years, and the change in just that amount of time is significant. And the amount of expectations that are placed on public schools from society has become just really consuming. But it is, you know, we really have to look more individual at each student, and to solve, just when we talk about mental health, the amount of mental health services that are out in the community have reduced drastically. And that expectation has been placed on the schools. And to be quite honest, the majority of educators are not trained in mental health. That's not a part of our program, but we have to try to figure out how to help students who have mental health disorders, and because that service is not as prevalent out in the community. So that's just one example. We have more students that have diabetic needs or allergies and different things like that, that those health concerns are more prevalent in our schools. And, you know, those can be very challenging for students to find success academically when they're having to deal with those kind of health concerns. So it has, schools have changed a lot, and I don't know that people really recognize that, because when I went to school, and probably all of us in this room, it was very different. There were a lot of children that weren't even allowed to go to public schools. They were placed in institutions, or they were placed in separate schools, and that's not allowed anymore. All children are expected to come to public schools, and we want to serve all those children, but that means that the resources that are needed are much more drastic than they used to be.
And does this mean that the public educational system is just having to grow into something else?
Well, I think that people may not recognize that the need for resources in public schools is growing so much, but the amount of resources that we have are still at a level of many years ago. And so how do you get those resources into the public schools when they've been removed from the community or from the society, and make sure that children have access to that when they're in public school?
You're listening to Coastline, talking about kids facing challenges in the Brunswick County school system with Deanne Meadows. She is the assistant superintendent and chief academic officer. We also have Bonnie Jordan, executive director of Communities in Schools in Brunswick County. How does this work, Deanne Meadows? I was recently accosted by some folks who work in the community in Brunswick County, and these are folks who were very concerned about some high poverty schools in which kids' parents would get in arrears on their accounts when it came to reduced lunches. Mm-hmm. They'd get in arrears in that program, and then the kids would be barred from participating in extracurricular activities. And these community folks were very concerned, saying, you know, these kids are the ones that need those extracurricular activities the most. Why, when the parents get in arrears, are the kids getting punished? Can you answer that?
Well, I think the difficulty is that we do have a free and reduced lunch program. So we want parents to apply for that. You know, I'd rather they apply and be denied than not apply. So let's apply, let's try, see if you can actually qualify for the free and reduced lunch program. If you don't qualify, then the expectation is that you have the resources to be able to pay for it. If something was to happen in your life and you lost your job or something like that, then you can apply at any point for free and reduced lunch program. If the parent does not pay for the lunch service, the lunches that the child eats, then somebody has to pay for that. And the federal government will not pay for that through the free and reduced lunch program. So that means we have to use local dollars to pay for that. So last year, we spent about $100,000 paying for families or for lunches that parents did not pay for. That's really two teaching positions in our district. And so we feel like those lunches, if they do not qualify for free and reduced lunch, that implies that they have the means to pay for the lunches for their children. We do provide free breakfast for every student through our district. So the expectation is that they should be able to pay that bill or apply for the free and reduced lunch program.
So you're talking then about parents who actually have not been established as having a need.
Right, right.
The classroom size requirement has been causing headaches for public school administrators across the state, and legislators admit the bill they passed last year is something that needs to be changed. It had unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. Can you just sort of explain, because I think this has been a complicated story for some of our listeners to understand, what this maximum class size requirement has meant to Brunswick County schools?
Well, when they lower the class size, that means that we're going to have to spread the students over more classes. So it's going to increase the number of classrooms that we need and the number of teachers that we need. So if the legislature provides funding for those additional teaching positions, that would suffice covering the teachers. But the space is also a part of it. So if I have to add, 20 classrooms to be able to accommodate that, currently, we don't have 20 classrooms, extra classrooms in the district to be able to place those classrooms or those teachers and students to be able to meet that requirement. So it's really, it's about the personnel, but it also is about the facility needs. And we did pass a bond, but we're not going to be able to build, that number of classrooms in this short amount of time to be able to provide that space for those students.
Right. And very briefly, the bond, where is that now? It was passed in November, $152 million.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be working through three phases because you only get so much money at a time. And we will work on those projects starting with the Town Creek Middle School, the addition to Town Creek Elementary, the addition to Lincoln Elementary, and some athletic improvements at our high schools, as well as across the board. There will be technology and some additional renovations across the board. But we are in the process of looking for designs, working on designs and construction managers and all of that. So it's moving forward.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Deanne Meadows, Bonnie Jordan, thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. Production assistant today, Emily Fulbright. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org or get the podcast on iTunes. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And join us for the next Coastline when we find out how the recent executive order banning travel from certain majority Muslim countries is impacting residents in the Cape Fear region. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.